Pacifico, Phil Henry.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. They just watch us wander out there into the field of fire, but we always return with the scalp. I don't know what that meant, but that's a nice way to kick things off, I think. Anyway, welcome to the program. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com, and it is there that with a backstage pass, you can watch our live streaming video of the show right now, live from the El Pacifico, and behind me, the roiling surf of the Pacific Ocean here in the evening hours. We're on from 10 on the Pacific Coast, but of course later on the East Coast. You can join us at 9:15 for our uncensored pre-show. And when I say uncensored, it's all of that colorful language. And but really the best part about the uncensored pre-show are the uncensored thoughts that we have. All right, which I can't go into right now because we'd have to censor them. On the line with me is Herb Sewell, and before we tell you anything about the story that we're going to be talking about tonight, and it's a story that you're familiar with, it's the continued holding of George Zimmerman on this second-degree murder rap. The news now is he may be released on bail Friday, tomorrow. Mr. Sewell himself has been incarcerated. He was at a forensic hospital, which at one time was known as a hospital for the criminally insane, I think is what they used to call these places. He was at Atascadero here in California as the result of his arrest and conviction on child molestation charges, trafficking in child pornography, assault. He spent 9 years at Atascadero undergoing a variety of therapies and is now out and has been for the last several years and contributes to our show when it comes to issues having to do with crime and punishment and other legal issues. And Herb, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Phil.
And, you know, every time I introduce you, obviously I have to go through a big preamble because that's some pretty terrible stuff that you did.
There's absolutely no question, and I don't want the perception at all to be that I'm not recognizing, I'm not aware of the severity of these crimes that I committed.
And would you say that you are, to the extent that we can believe in rehabilitation, rehabilitated?
Well, I can tell you that I continue to undergo psychiatric treatment as well as psychological counseling. I am currently at a halfway house. I'm under a very, very strict supervision. Obviously, the parameters given my parole and the probation from the court, all of these, if violated, would remand me back to custody. So I'm certainly very aware of what can happen if I am if I run afoul of these things. Secondly, to the extent, Phil, that anyone will believe me, and I hope that they do, but I can understand that they won't or that they would not. I can assure you that with the awareness of the severity of these crimes also comes, in my mind, the desire to continue to modify my behavior. You get a lot of people who tell you, well, I don't believe him. You know, he's an accident waiting to happen.
Well, there is a lot of recidivism. There's a lot of guys like you that do go back to jail.
I understand that, but I do pride myself, I think, on being a little bit more intelligent than perhaps the average offender. I'm not trying to say that I'm something special, but I do value very much my freedom. And I'm not at all desirous of returning to jail. So I do appreciate the opportunity to come on your program, and I also, of course, appreciate the opportunity of things I do as a research assistant for the different universities.
Now, you work as a research assistant. You do all of it is telecommuting, right?
That is correct. Yes.
So, in other words, you're on your computer, and you're what are you doing?
Well, I, as a research assistant, obviously I'm researching. I'm using library materials as well as online materials, looking up and collating and collecting information for different departments and personnel at the different institutions of higher learning. It might have something to do with a class that's being presented. It might have something to do with research material that's being needed in a laboratory test of some kind. So I'm simply just you could call me sort of a library gopher. But it's work that I can do you know, here in my room and working on my computer.
All right, so let's talk about George Zimmerman, because that's what I told people we were going to discuss. Have you followed this?
I have followed it, yes.
What do you think of this guy, Mr. Zimmerman?
Well, I think that he, you know, I don't want to, I think he's a very humorous person. I shouldn't say that, because he murdered, they say he murdered someone. Now, I'm not going to comment on the guilt or innocence ban, because I do believe that the court should sort that out. But I will tell you this. I think that his behavior is rather de rigueur. That is, I don't see anything in his behavior that is any different from these self-appointed kinds of cops. You know, this guy's playing cop. I mean, let's just say what it was. There's no shame in that. When you go out and you play cop because you want to be some kind of lawman, you know, you see yourself, you're going down the street like you was a man in history, Wyatt Earp, you know.
Like the guy, yeah, the shootout at the O.K. Corral.
The shootout at the O.K. Corral, yes. And some of these people, well, that in their fantasy, I suppose that's all well and good. But I dare say to go into life and to act in that manner and to provoke an incident, which I think he did do, I think it's about as ridiculous, and I think it's plainly what happened. Now, you would ask me about his incarceration.
Well, the thing that I want to find out about here is, you said you didn't want to judge his guilt or innocence. It sounds to me like you think he's guilty.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he is. I what I'm telling you is, I think he acted like a fool. I think his behavior was that of, as I said, one of these wannabe cops. It was clownish. It was embarrassing. I can't put enough words on it to describe just what a dunce, more than anything else, this man is. Now, how he got a concealed permit, and I will tell you this, by the way. You know, I think people in Florida, if they listen to the program, they're like, thank your lucky stars that I was an offender in California, because if I were down in Florida right now, my God, I don't know what would be the parameters.
Well, I dare say we probably would get some calls from Floridians right now saying you would, if you showed your face out on the street, they'd shoot you.
Oh, well, yes, I know all the tough talk. I've heard all the, believe me, I spent 9 years in prison, so there's not a whole lot of that sort of neighborhood chit-chat that impresses me. But I will tell you, and I mean this very seriously, George Zimmerman has a problem. And unless he looks at this very creatively, he's going to continue to have a problem.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking here with Herb Sewell, a man who had been incarcerated at Atascadero's Forensic Hospital, who is now a free man on probation. He had been arrested for child pornography, which I did not know.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I didn't know that was part of the charges, as well as child molestation, as well as just these horrible crimes, Herb.
No, I'm not denying that at all.
No, I want people to know that you're aware of that as well as I am. Now, here is the question. George Zimmerman getting out of jail, some people are saying, and by getting out of jail, I mean making bond and getting out on Friday, some people are saying the guy is not going to be safe. What do you say?
Well, here is my thought on that. George Zimmerman getting out of jail, and people saying, well, he's not going to be safe. Let me tell you, if I were George Zimmerman, this is how I would view that. And this may be his only saving grace. This may very well save George Zimmerman. It's hard for me to put this into words, but this might very well rehabilitate his image. And here it is. If George Zimmerman leaves jail, and George Zimmerman is attacked or assaulted by any one of a number of factions of people that are angry at him for these events that we've been reading so much about, you recognize, and I hope George Zimmerman recognizes, that automatically gives him the moral high ground. You see what I'm saying?
When you say the moral high ground, what do you mean?
I mean that if George Zimmerman becomes the object of attack, if George Zimmerman becomes the object of someone attempting to physically assault, injure, or, God forbid, something worse, George Zimmerman will reclaim the moral high ground that he lost that night as he was attempting to, in his fevered brain, protect the citizens of Tombstone, you know, whatever it was he thought he was doing, and he would be now. He would have the moral high ground
because he's been attacked by a mob.
Well, not so much a mob, but he'd been attacked. So the people that decried the violence, now all of a sudden are the instruments, if you will, of violence. See? You know what I'm saying? So that's what I think is. I find that to be very interesting. I think it's fascinating. I think that we should let it play out. I think that.
Well, what you're doing now is you're saying that George Zimmerman is going to be a little experiment for you. God knows what's going to happen to the guy.
Well, I think that the man right now, Phil, has lost that people don't like. There's a lot of people don't like him. He goes out there. Who cares what happens to George? It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But who cares what happens to George Zimmerman? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I do. I do. And people who are law-abiding citizens do.
So you support him?
No, I don't necessarily support him at all. But I don't want to see the guy. I don't want to see our system of justice handed over to a mob. I don't want to see a lynch mob.
Exactly. You don't want to see a lynch mob. And people like you will be shocked if someone tries something to harm George Zimmerman. When I was thinking about this, and I thought very long and hard about it, because I knew I was going to come on your program, I thought, my God, the man has a ready-made defense if he can suffer an assault and survive it.
Well, so what are you saying? You're saying go out there, George, and see if someone assaults you?
No, I'm not, but I'm just saying, if it happened, no, I would not. I would not advise the man to go look for it, but, my God, is there any doubt that there are people who might be gunning for him?
Yeah, and he may not survive it.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Now, let's take a look at a man who...
All right, first, I got to take a break here, okay?
All right, but I wanted to bring up another man that we know who did not survive an assault.
Okay, no, just hold on. 877-876-PHIL, Herb Sewell with us on the case of George Zimmerman, who may make bond tomorrow. And Herb is saying that if George Zimmerman is out on bail and everybody says, well, where can he go to be safe? Herb's saying... Even if he isn't safe, even if he gets assaulted, it gives him the moral high ground again. He would be a victim, just like Trayvon Martin. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You understand what I'm saying?
Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL, and on the line with us is Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell, a former inmate at Atascadero, where he was incarcerated for child molestation, child pornography. And you were there for a reason, Herb. You were not just in a regular prison, you were in a forensic hospital. Because why?
Well, I was at the time I was deemed to be obviously a psychopath, but that's not treatable. At the time, they felt you could treat a psychopathic personality, and they know now you can't really treat.
Are you a psychopath?
Well, I think that I lack in certain areas I do lack a sort of empathy. Although I will tell you that I have had empathetic moments that have been actually destroyed by society.
In what way?
Well, since I left the prison, there have been times when I might see a child in danger or doing something that is dangerous. And I've had empathetic moments where I might want to say, well, I need to go help that child or guide that child to a safer place, but I don't do it for two reasons. Number one, I would get into very serious trouble in violating the terms of my parole, and I would also, engender the criticism of society in general. People would be aghast, even though it would be something that perhaps I am inclined to do. So I would not help that child. And so the empathetic nature that I may have, whatever that may be...
So you're telling me you can feel empathy?
Oh, there are times. Not always. When I'm... Especially when it has to do with violence against adults. I have no real feeling about that. I find it interesting. I'm not saying that I would go out and commit that kind of act, but, for instance, Walter Belhaven, who is a very good friend of mine and is still incarcerated at Tascadero, he's technically a serial murderer. Walter would go on for days, telling me about the people that he had dispatched, to give it a polite term, no, seriously, he would, and he and I would talk about it as if we were discussing, a good place to fish, a great campground.
No, that's what we hear about psychopaths, that there is a dispassionate lack of feeling, so that's what I'm saying. It sounds to me like you are a psychopath.
I think you would be right, except for, as I mentioned to you, those moments... those islands of feeling. Islands of feeling, as Dr. Savick called it when I was at the task desk. He said to me, Herb, it's not that you're completely unfeeling. You do have these islands of humanity, which Walter, for instance, does not have. Randall Toomey, who's another very interesting man that I was in prison with. He was a serial murderer. He had no island of humanity in him at all, but I occasionally had these islands of humanity, as Dr. Southey called it. So,
all right, I don't want to get off into too much of a thing, but I just wanted to know why they put you in a place like a Tascadero as opposed to a regular prison.
Well, probably if I was in a regular prison, I would not have survived. I think that, I have to thank the state of California for that, but...
Well, I don't think anybody in the judicial system probably cared much one way or the other, right?
No, they probably didn't. No.
So they put you up there thinking you might be rehabilitated or cured. All right. I don't want to get off too much into what, your situation is. It's very clear. We're back talking about George Zimmerman here with Herb Sewell. And we're going to take some phone calls, too. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Safety and location at issue if Zimmerman is released on bond. After spending a week in a jail cell by himself, the Neighborhood Watch volunteer charged with murdering Trevon Martin stands a good chance of being granted bail on Friday, despite the severity of the second-degree murder charge that he faces, and whether George Zimmerman is allowed to leave the county as he awaits trial, and how he would remain safe are two questions likely to be at the center of the hearing at the Seminole County Criminal Justice Center, legal experts say. He may not want to be released.
Well, I think that would be a mistake. I think that he should be released, and I think he should want to be released. And I know, just hear me out for a moment. I think he should want to be released, and I think he should have security that stands enough at a distance so that there is a possibility that he could be roughed up. I'm not talking about being shot. I'm not even talking about being beat up. But I think if he's roughed up a little bit, I think if he's knocked to the ground, I think that George Zimmerman has to suffer something like that. I think he has to make himself a target. I really do. I think he has to make himself a target so that he becomes sympathetic in the view and in the mind and in the eyes of the people that are watching him from afar, watching him through the media, watching through the different kind of media, and making up their own mind as to the guilt or innocence of this man. And that is something you are not going to be able to do unless you actually do it. Now,
let me bring up the name of someone who was accused of a vicious crime, a horrible crime, who was assaulted and was killed, and that was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
All right. Lee Harvey Oswald died at the hands of a guy that was a big Kennedy supporter, a man who loved President Kennedy. Do you think that people's opinion of Lee Harvey Oswald changed?
Oh, without question it changed. He went from being the only man that killed Kennedy. There was a whole conspiracy theory And he was a foil. He was a pawn. He was simply a man being moved around by the CIA. Oh, yes, absolutely, people had sympathy for him. And I think that that is what George Zimmerman has got to hope for.
All right, we're going to be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Herb Sewell. And our number, 877-876-7445. Should George Zimmerman suffer an assault of some kind to make himself sympathetic? The Phil Henry Show.
Henry.
And so, oh, we're not on the air.
Our number 877-876-PHIL, and welcome back here. Herb Sewell has joined us as we talk about George Zimmerman and whether or not he's going to be out on bail tomorrow. The consideration is the following. It would be not wise to grant him bail because he may not be safe as a free man, or at least a man who is no longer locked up and being held for trial. That out there in the world, he would be unsafe. It would be unsafe because of the passions that are running very, very high around this case. Herb is on with us saying, well, and Herb, you recognize that it's easy to say, why don't you go out of jail, you know, get out of jail and risk the assault? Because I just told you, Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't even out of jail. He was being transported someplace.
Well, I mean, and I think that bears scrutiny. And I'll tell you why. I'm talking about a man who's been released on bail and would be out as a free man, according to the ruling of the judicial system of this country. And then what happens is he is assaulted. Now comes that moment where suddenly a bad man becomes a man that people have sympathy for. And I think that that's the best possible thing that George Zimmerman can do is to try to get some of that sympathy back this way. Now, because you have to understand something. Like Oswald, when you kill someone who is admired or who is supported or who is loved or who is, in many ways, when people look at you, they see you, and then when they look at the person that you killed, they see a bigger and better person. That was the case, of course, with John Kennedy and Lee Harvey. Lee Harvey Oswald, compared to John Kennedy, was a worm. He was an earthworm. He was a bug. He was an insect. And no hope to rehabilitate his public image unless he was sacrificed on the altar of mob violence. And you see what I'm saying. Now you have George Zimmerman. Compared to Trayvon Martin, a young man who has lost his life, the representation of youth, if you will, a young man who was talking to his girlfriend, a young man who had a mother and a father, a young man who had, was starting his life out, a young man who was simply holding on to Skittles. Compared to that, George Zimmerman, again, we have to be honest, he's like an insect. He's like something small, something insignificant, something that, something that you would wipe off the bottom of your shoe if you would. How do you counter that?
Well, you're saying that you have to sacrifice yourself.
Not in Zimmerman's case, necessarily, because he'd be a free man. He wouldn't be transported between jails as Lee Harvey Oswald. With Lee Harvey Oswald, the bug was being moved from one garbage heap to the next. In the case of George Zimmerman, if you will, forgive me, I don't mean anything personal by this, but just to use the phrase, in the case of George Zimmerman, that insect is being let out of the garbage dump, and he gets to roam free.
Well, the idea that he's an insect.
But again, Lee Harvey Oswald, John Kennedy, George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin and John Kennedy are people who are now have passed into. They have passed into history, and they are bigger than life, and more powerful. And hence, they make the other look like a bug.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-7445. We're talking here to Herb Sewell, and I'm going to get Marilyn on the line here. Marilyn, go ahead.
Oh, hello, Phil. This is Marilyn Donnelly.
And I've spoken to you before on the show. Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm very interested in the conversation you're having here this evening. I wanted to address my comments to this gentleman, Mr. Sewell.
them.
You said that this man, Mr. Zimmerman, should sacrifice himself in order that he might get the moral high ground or the moral elevated moral position in this case. And I fail to see how that would happen other than the fact that he would be a lynched, as you put the word, a lynched bad man. Many people want to see that happen. So how do you know he's going to reclaim any kind of moral high ground?
Again, I used the example, and may I ask you a question? It's only because of my experience when I was in jail.
I would appreciate it if you'd answer my question first before you ask your question.
My point was more to what Phil was saying. That is that Lee Harvey Oswald is a worm. As I said, he was an insect being transported from one part of the garbage dump to another. Lee Harvey Oswald became much, much bigger in death. Lee Harvey Oswald became a man that was essentially a pawn of the CIA, or moved about the chessboard by the diplomatic corps, by the secret service, so on and so forth. And Lee Harvey Oswald did very much become a sympathetic figure. And I think that the same would be true of George Zimmerman. Now, could I ask you a question?
Well, yes. I wanted to make one comment.
Go ahead.
I don't see how George Zimmerman would become sympathetic. I will tell you that certainly if he lost his life.
That's my point. If he lost his life, I don't want to see a lynch mob.
Yeah, and the more we talk about this, the more uncomfortable I get, you know.
Well, that is my point.
In what way?
Well, I just don't like openly talking about this.
Well, you know, first of all, Phil, you know that some people think about that.
But I don't. I still am not convinced that George Zimmerman would become a sympathetic character simply because someone. What was your question, anyway?
Yes, my question for you. Your name is Marilyn, right?
Yes, it is.
And because of the time I spent in prison, are you transgender?
I'm pre-surgical.
Oh, all right. So I was right. You are still technically a man.
No, I present as a woman. I'm a woman now, but I am pre-operative. I do present as a woman.
Present as a woman, all right. I saw a lot of these, these characters.
Excuse me, but I'm not a character.
I understand that, but I saw a great many men in prison who, by the way, fell in the state of California. Your listeners might be very interested to know that in the state of California, you have to pay for these sex change operations.
I'm not in prison.
Who's paying for your sex change?
I am. My insurance is.
Oh, you're not in prison.
No, she's not in prison. You were in prison.
Well, in prison, I met a lot of these guys. They wanted to get this kind of operation, but
I would like to ask you a question if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
When you are thinking or when you are talking, you go into a very there is a rather irritating moment when you will say, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the way that Herb you talk. You know, you're aware of that?
I'm not aware of what?
When you are answering questions or when you're talking, you will say and another thing.
I say most people say,
No, she's right. You go,
Oh, what are you talking about?
I'm telling you the truth.
Oh, it sounds retarded. And
you're right, it does sound retarded. That's why I'm wondering.
No, I mean, what you're saying...
No, Herb, take it from me. When you are talking, you will go, You'll be talking.
I'm saying the word, it's not a word. It's an expressive sound... right there? You mean like that?
You hear you went, and then you stopped yourself.
No, I didn't go, I think I know what you mean.
You did. You went, and then you stopped yourself.
You did. You did, Herb. You went, and then you recognized what it was.
Anyway, I didn't go, Here's what the problem I'm having. If you want to make me sound like I'm some kind of spaz,
I didn't use that word at all, sir. I just simply said that you go,
all right, so you asked me why I do that.
Yes, why do you do that?
You know that I got electroshock when I was in inside.
Okay.
Oh, look at this. So you've got it figured out, huh?
Well, that would certainly explain it.
Well, no, I don't understand. What is it?
I got electroshock when I was at Atascadero. And it's like right now. It's difficult for me to find the next word. And so sometimes I will, instead of going, because I don't want to sound like a drooling animal, I'll simply go, like that. It makes more comfortable.
Well, it sounds very strange. It's almost as if you've got, you've gone into brain lock or something.
Yeah, but I don't want to go,
Well, it doesn't sound that bad.
What? When I go, or when I go,
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the electroshock that I had. Can you get rid of her, please?
Oh, what is your problem with me?
Because I knew a million guys like you inside, all of you jockeying to have one installed, just so you might get some better treatment.
Oh, so in other words, you're saying I'm going to have one installed because I what? Because I want to be treated better? You're absolutely right. I'm a woman, and I do want to be treated better.
No, I mean in prison, not necessarily you.
What do you mean in one installed?
Three guesses.
So, in other words, let's get off of that, Herb. I don't want to hear about your prejudices involving prison. I just, the lady asked a question.
The lady, yeah.
Well, Mr. Henry's being polite, if you don't mind.
Yeah, the lady. She asked a question about you going, and you're saying you do it on purpose.
I don't know I'm doing it, but I think I'm doing it in reaction to the electroshock and the insulin shock that I got in prison because they got their kicks strapping me to a table and feeding me with electricity. Do you understand? That's how they get their laughs up there.
I dare say they're not getting their laughs.
This is it's a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, yeah, sure. In any event, they strap me down, and it causes me, from time to time, to have a difficult time finding the next word, and I will sometimes go, like I just did. So rather than sound like a drooler, like an animal, like a mindless animal, like Bellhaven, like Toomey, like so many guys that I left behind, they sound like mindless animals after they come out of that electroshock. They're like this, That's what they sound like. So I want to sound like a human being for a change. Just for a change. And so I go,
Oh, yeah, that sounds real human.
Well, you know something, Butch.
All right, hold on, and thank you, Marilyn. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Unbelievable. All right, we'll be right back. The
Truth
world famous,
is
so I don't
bitch.
Sound like a mindless animal.
The Phil Hendry Show.
He sounds like a mindless animal now.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. As we wrap up our final segment here, we are talking with Herb Sewell, who is a contributor of ours on all kinds of issues having to do with crime and punishment and some of the seedier aspects of criminality. Mr. Sewell himself was imprisoned. He was remanded to a psychiatric hospital, a forensic hospital, for 8 years as the result of his conviction on child molestation, child pornography, and so forth, Herb. I've got on the line, Herb, Bunny Bellhaven, who I know is... Walter's wife.
Bunny, I'd love to talk with Bunny.
And Bunny, how are you?
Hi, Phil. Very good. Thank you for having me on your program.
Good. And,
Bunny, it's Herb Sewell.
Oh, Herb, how are you? Walter was talking to me today about some books that you were going to send him.
I want to send him, I want to send him the Botany. I'm going to send him the Sierra Club, but he also wanted the Botany book, and I've got the John Muir book.
Yeah, he was talking about that, so I went and I saw him today.
Ms. Bellhaven, it's interesting that you're calling in. Were you calling in about the Zimmerman case?
Well, I was listening to Herb talking about his time at Atascadero, and as you know, my husband is currently incarcerated at Atascadero. And what Herb says is true. There's a level of, I think that there is a level of treatment there that sometimes can blur the line into a kind of abuse, and you know that we are talking so much these days about torture and you know the mistreatment of people that We have this every day in our prisons across this country.
Well, let me just jump in here, Bunny, and say it. I appreciate that, but you know you're not going to change it.
Oh, I know you're not going to change that, but my husband, Walter, who has been incarcerated still in the state of California since 1991.
Now, your husband has been accused of some horrifying crimes, and he was convicted of some horrifying crimes.
And Walter does not deny any of it. And Walter would be the very first person to tell you that he should never be let out.
And that is true. I've spoken with Walter myself, and Walter has said, never let me out. Tell them, don't let me out.
Yeah, well, that has been, it's almost like a mantra with him. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I would call it a mantra. He says, please, Herb, when you get up to administration, whoever you see there wearing a suit, tell them, don't let Belhaven out.
Yeah, and that's all right.
Well, how do you feel about that, Bunny? You're his wife.
Well, that's all right. We don't get conjugal visits, but we're at an age right now, it really doesn't matter anymore. Anyway, I don't really care. What I mostly care about is Walter's collection, and we went to court against the state of California. We were able to win.
By the way, congratulations on that, Bunny. It was outstanding.
We had a very good lawyer.
And what was this case?
It was a forensic artifact that Walter took possession of. The state of California said that it was there. It had nothing to do whatsoever with the crimes that Walter committed.
It was a skull, Phil. Basically, it was a human skull.
Yes, it was a human skull. It belonged to my husband.
And it was a human skull that was introduced as evidence?
No, it was never introduced as any evidence. It was never a part of any case against Walter. It was simply a human skull that he had in his possession, and they were never able to track it to any crime.
Well, what is he doing with a human skull?
That's not the point, you know.
I've got it, Herb. Hold on. That's not the point, Phil. The point is it was my husband's possession, and it belonged to him.
But don't you ever wonder, don't you ever wonder what your husband's doing with a human skull, like whose it is?
No, I don't. I never asked my husband. I never got into my husband's business like that. I understand he committed some terrible crimes, but there was nothing I was going to be able to do about it.
You're never going to be able to stop him.
No, I was never going to stop him, and that was his life. But when Walter had this skull, and the Oakland police wanted this skull, I said, well, we're going to go to court. And
so you guys went to court to protect your husband's right to have this skull.
That's exactly correct. And
I got it, Herb.
I know, but I followed the case very closely while I was in Atascadero.
Well, you know, guess who was not in Atascadero?
You.
Ah, bingo. Bingo.
Sorry.
So I wasn't in Atascadero. I paid attention to the case, and we were able to get the skull back.
So where's the skull now?
It's with my husband's personal effects in our home, and we'll be here waiting for him when he gets out. I don't think he's ever going to get out.
Are you, so you've resigned yourself to the fact your husband's in prison or in this forensic hospital for the rest of his life?
Well, I think at some point they'll probably remove him from Atascadero to put him in more minimum security.
But that's dicey when it comes to Walter, because he is a very much a flight risk, and he's very much an escape risk.
Because the one time at Lone Park he got into Santa Barbara, and
Did he escape from Lompoc?
He did escape from Lompoc. He made it as far as Santa Barbara, but he wasn't out 2 hours. He'd already killed 4 people.
Good God!
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've never hidden what Walter's about. And
he killed 4? He was out... give me this again.
He escaped minimum security. It wasn't Lompoc. It was someplace else. I forget where. It might have been some smaller work camp or something like that. And he got as far as Santa Barbara, and within 2 hours he'd slaughtered 4 people, I think, and stolen, a semi?
Yeah, he stole a semi. It was a supermarket truck, and went on a joyride.
With the bodies in the back, Phil. Understand that this was a supermarket refrigerated truck. He kills 4 people, throws them into the refrigerated back, and it goes on a joyride.
In other words, trying to get caught.
Well, he didn't care whether he got caught or not. He knew he was probably going to get caught. But he just took a joyride.
He got as far as Phoenix, Arizona.
He got as far as Phoenix, Arizona in a truck and trailer with 4 dead bodies in a refrigerated back end that he killed.
That's right. And you know, I talked to him, Bunny. I don't know if Walter ever told you the story, but we were talking, and I said to him, hey, Walter, what were you doing with the refrigerator. I just want to keep it fresh. Do you have to tell you that?
No, I didn't hear the part about what?
I said I wanted to keep them fresh. I said, fresh? They're frozen. frozen. Yeah, have you ever had fresh seafood?
You know what, Herb, you're just not that funny.
In any event, Phil.
All right, well, so it's a good thing he's locked up. And you have the skull back, and so you're just, you visit your husband, and that's it, huh?
Well, the reason I came out, we do have a chili to cook out, Herb. It's coming up on Sunday. And this is a chili cookout that we have at our home for guys that were on that ward with Herb and with Walter and Randall Toomey. And if Randall can't be there, his wife's going to be there. So some of the guys are inside.
I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. Bunny Bellhaven, who I guess is having her annual chili cook-off, or not cook-off, cook-out, whatever, for these nuts. All right, we'll be back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Jeff Dowder coming up. 420 is on the table as our topic next on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
What do I wear?
Here on the world famous Phil Henry Show. Tomorrow is 420, and that may be a bit mysterious to some. You probably have heard the phrase or the numbers put together 420. Some people may think that means Earth Day. No, actually, Earth Day is 422. 420 is seen and you know, the first time that we actually acknowledged 420 on the air must have been, I guess, about 7 or 8 years ago. When, frankly, one of my engineers was familiar with 420. And 420 is a unofficial day of celebration. You might say that it is the national holiday of dope smokers. It is, in point of fact, the day where people smoke weed in abundance to acknowledge their love of the herb and the fact that they, think it should be legalized and that there are a lot of pot smokers in America and elsewhere around the world, and that it, it's almost like an Arbor Day, I guess, for dope. We're going to get Darren Brown on the line, who is an attorney, criminal defense attorney, and has done some work in this area, and by that I mean. You have, Darren, you have been a prosecutor prosecuting possession, prosecuting the charges of possession, transport.
Well, yeah, the crimes that I prosecuted, Phil, have been primarily for the possession of sale of marijuana and yeah, interstate transport of marijuana. And I was a prosecutor with the Elko County for 6 years, and that was... that was a big part of our caseload because people are traveling with the loads of marijuana from California back east, a lot of it going down south, California being the primary production center, if you want to call it that, the United States of this very potent kind of marijuana. So we saw a lot of transport cases, yeah.
What is your – so you prosecuted the possession?
Yes, as I said, possession.
But what I'm saying is you came out actively, of course, as a prosecutor, it's your job, but did you not speak out as well when you were running for attorney general?
We did, I was very forceful in my comments about the legalization of marijuana. I do not believe that we should, and I still don't think that we should, and I haven't changed my opinion about that in the many years that I've been an attorney, either on the prosecutorial side or on the defense side. I just don't think that a drug like marijuana should be legalized because I believe it to be a very dangerous drug. I think it's a gateway drug to much more serious drugs. And I think that the use of marijuana has gone up exponentially almost in the recent years. It has been celebrated in the culture. I think it's we've got to a point now where, as difficult as it is to realize, we've gotten to a point now, I think, where in some cases law enforcement looks the other way when people are using this drug. So I think that we've got to we've got to get our priorities straight again here. And
you called it a gateway drug. Explain that.
Well, what I mean by a gateway drug is I think that it's a drug that will lead to heroin, that will lead to the use of methamphetamines, the use of crack and crack cocaine, and so on. I think that marijuana is the beginning of a slippery slope that the user is bound and will be destined to slide down into heavier drug use. And that, I think, is the reason why we are opposed and will remain opposed to the legalization of marijuana.
Now, let me ask you a question here about this whole, you know, the, I'm sure you've heard time and again the arguments against the gateway drug case, that some people will say, for instance, yeah, and we started drinking milk, too, and that led to heroin.
Well, that's a specious argument. I don't think that that's not a drug. We're talking about drug use.
But isn't it also true that a lot of people started drinking alcohol and started with heroin, and a lot of people drank coffee and then went on to heroin? A lot of people smoked cigarettes.
No, we're talking about mood-altering drugs again. Now, you're talking about alcohol. That's entirely different. But I think you'll see the statistics would bear me out that the greater number of people who are marijuana users would eventually go on to use heroin than would go on to, using alcohol. This was in the Anslinger report.
Now, that's a very interesting case, the Anslinger Report.
Well, the Anslinger Report was published in the 1930s and is borne out to be true.
Well, let me just interrupt you. Wasn't the Anslinger Report debunked by the city of New York and others as being absolutely fictitious?
I'm not aware of that, not at all. When you say what do you mean by fictitious?
I mean that the city of New York commissioned its own report on the effects of marijuana back in the 40s, right after this Anslinger report came out. And I believe the mayor at that time was LaGuardia, who himself made the announcement of the results, saying marijuana, according to their study, marijuana did not have anything to do with hard drug use, was in point of fact not as serious, destructive a drug as people had said, and so forth, that there was this fear thing going on.
Well, I think you're talking about if my memory is, sir, if I'm reading you right, Phil, you're talking about this hysteria. People were making fun of very honest efforts to alert the public to the dangers of marijuana, and one of the efforts was a movie called Reefer Madness. Now, if you watch it, yes, it's humorous. But it was an honest effort to keep people aware of the destructive effects of marijuana. Now, I'm not familiar with the city of New York or Mayor LaGuardia commissioning any such report.
No, it was. I mean, this is a fact. And yet that was lost to history, but the Anslinger report continues to be, you know, the one that everybody falls back on.
Well, and with good reason. That was a commission report by the United States government. Said that marijuana leads to harder drugs. It can be addictive. It has led to the increased use of harder drugs. Now, that's where I stand, and that's where I'm. The Anslinger report may, for all intents and purposes, be absolutely false. It may be completely fabricated. But I'm glad that they made the report because it now has people believing, and they should, that marijuana is dangerous.
All right, so in other words, you're admitting that the Anslinger report could be completely false. You know what I'm saying? It could be completely false, and it could be something that has nothing to do with reality, and yet you're okay with that.
I'm okay with it because it keeps people away from marijuana. Marijuana is a dangerous drug.
But if the Anslinger report is a false and is a made-up and fictitious bunch of bunk that the U.S. government just threw out there to create a panic back in the 30s, then how can you say that, and you have admitted to that, how can you say that marijuana is a dangerous drug?
Because marijuana is because the Anslinger report, Phil, is made up, doesn't mean that marijuana is not a dangerous gateway drug. The Anslinger report was put together by people who might have been smoking marijuana, for all we know, when they actually wrote it. They might have been on a lot of different drugs when they wrote it. But what we do know is this, that when that report was finished, when they finished writing that report, as stoned as the people who wrote it might have been, as out of their minds on any number of different drugs, both psychotropic as well as sedative hypnotic, it still came out to be a report that was pretty solid, in saying that marijuana was a dangerous drug and that it was a gateway drug. Now, who better to tell you that than the individual who's actually using the drug at that time? And again, I don't know if they were actually smoking marijuana when they wrote the report, but it reads as if, you know, they could very well have been on psychotropic drugs, or sedative hypnotic drugs, or the like. And that's how it reads, but it makes sense in light of what we know today, that marijuana has been used by people and they've gone on to use heroin and other more dangerous drugs.
But you just said, Darren, that the report reads like it was written by people who were on drugs, psychotropic or sedative, hypnotic or otherwise. You just said that, and yet you're saying doesn't make any difference.
It does not make any difference, because what it did do is it alerted the American people to a very dangerous situation vis-a-vis the use of marijuana.
It alerted the American people to a dangerous situation, the use of marijuana, written by people who were themselves, you know, stoned.
I don't know, Philip. What I'm saying is, you're taking my words and twisting them a little bit. I don't know if they were or not. I'm saying it reads like it could have been.
So it reads like it was written by people that were out of their minds.
I don't know if you can say out of their minds. It reads like people who are high on a drug.
Okay, if it reads like... So it was written by people who are high on a drug.
Right.
Then why would you believe what's in it?
Because the evidence bears out the report. The evidence shows us, Phil, that we've had countless people smoking marijuana and going on to using heroin, methamphetamines, ketamine, and the most destructive drug known to man, STP, which is a hallucinogenic that leaves LSD far in the dust. This is what we're having to deal with as a result of this influx of marijuana use.
All right, Darren Brown with us, a former prosecuting attorney. He's now in private practice, and we're talking about 420, but really what we're talking about is marijuana. And he is saying that the Anslinger Report, which is something you guys ought to pull up, it is a report that was written in the 30s. It was commissioned by the U.S. government. It is complete and total horse dung. But it was Harry Anslinger's attempt at scaring the American people so much that marijuana would be illegal and would be prohibited and would just would never cross our radar again. And in a few short years, a independent study commissioned by the city of New York found that none of the things said in the Anslinger report were true. And yet, the Anslinger report remains. The LaGuardia report has faded into history. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's been a long time since we've talked about the effects, anything having to do with marijuana, the effects of marijuana. I don't know how long it's been since I've talked to anybody about the effects of marijuana, you know, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. We know today, and we have on the line with us Darren Brown, an attorney, former prosecuting attorney. We know today, Darren, that there's medical marijuana. There are doctors that have the science... Science has weighed in favorably on the side of marijuana when it comes to its some of its curative effects.
Phil, that is information that I think it needs to be looked at a little bit more carefully. Because first of all, I don't know where the body of literature is that says the medical field has signed off on marijuana as a drug that is, as you put it, curative or is therapeutic in any way. So I think the jury's out on that. I know that there are doctors that prescribe it. There are doctors that prescribe any number of valerian root. I know doctors that prescribe valerian root, which they say it helps sleep, you know, but this is simply an herb that medical doctors prescribe, and they may be prescribing it because of its a placebo effect, for all I know. No, I don't think that the literature is in at all.
And you're telling me that marijuana, the state of California, which gives out medical marijuana licenses and which has doctors prescribing marijuana...
Look, first of all, no doctor that's worth his weight is going to prescribe a drug, a prescription for a drug that is delivered by way of smoke into the lungs. That's number one. And number two...
So doctors that work at these medical marijuana facilities are, what are they, quacks?
I'm just going to say this. You don't prescribe a drug that you take into your system by way of the lungs. And you certainly don't prescribe a drug that you take into your system that may be helping your rheumatism, or it might be helping any other kind of physical condition. I don't know. It could be in your mind, because we know that marijuana affects the mind and affects the mind as a sedative hypnotic. So your rheumatism may be getting cured, and in its place, you are hallucinating, or you are conceptualizing a conceptual hallucination.
And what do you mean hallucinating? What is that about? What are you talking about? I've known people. I've smoked marijuana myself many years ago.
And you're telling me that you don't smoke marijuana now?
No, I do not. No, I don't.
And let me ask you this: do you think anybody believes that?
It doesn't matter. I don't smoke it. I'll tell you why I don't smoke it.
Because you're saying that because you don't want anybody that you don't want your audience to turn against you.
No. I'll tell you why I don't smoke marijuana. I don't smoke it because it does not affect me biochemically in a pleasurable way. I don't like its effects on me. My drug of choice when it comes to relaxing is alcohol. Marijuana does not coexist in my chemistry, my biochemistry, pleasurably. My heart rate increases. I don't feel good.
Well, are you okay? Are you one of these people that gets paranoid and you want to be taken home from the party early? Is that it?
I think I answered your question here, Darren. What are you talking about?
I'm just telling you. Marijuana. If you want to cure your rheumatism, that's fine. But if you want to look in the mirror and hallucinate that you're something that you're not, or this kind of thing, this is what we're talking about.
And I've never heard of anybody hallucinating on marijuana that way.
You've never heard, and obviously you haven't heard the test case, you haven't heard the talking about the literature, where time and again we've had individuals who've gone to the doctor's office, and they have reported smoking some of this, marijuana, especially the marijuana that today is of a much higher grade. And then they get up and walk to a mirror and look in the mirror and see and are actively hallucinating imagery.
What are you telling me? That they're hallucinating?
In one instance, a young man mentioned that he had finished smoking a marijuana cigarette and had gotten up from the couch that he was sitting on and walked directly to a mirror and looked in and saw a simian or ape or chimpanzee looking hallucination. I myself, in gaining the job of prosecutor, had to experiment, smoke a little bit of marijuana to know the effects, and I myself hallucinated an image in the mirror when I looked in the mirror.
What did you see?
Well, I remember looking in the mirror and seeing a Teutonic knight, a knight in full armor, staring back at me. So this is a part of the marijuana effects. And when you say that, and then, of course, there's the effect that marijuana has on you, which makes you paranoid, and you want to have someone take you home. And
I don't think I ever said that, I don't think I've ever had to leave a party early because I smoked marijuana. I'm just telling you, I don't like...
Well, it's embarrassing to go to your friends and say, oh, God, please take me home. I'm paranoid after the spliff we just smoked. You're going to be embarrassed. And I understand why.
What are we talking about now?
I'm just telling you, Phil, the effects of marijuana on a variety of people, from hallucination to what happens. You say that it biochemically interacts with you and in a negative way.
All right, let me go to a phone call, 877-876-PHIL. I don't know what you mean by I'm paranoid and I want to go home from the party early. I said that the biochemical interaction between my chemistry and marijuana was not pleasant. I didn't like it. I didn't say I got to be taken home from the party early.
Well, it's embarrassing to go to a friend, if you're a guy, and say, hey, Dave, please take me home because I'm scared after smoking that spliff that your brother brought back from Vietnam.
Boy, that's bringing back some memories.
I'll bet it does. I'll bet it does.
In any event, let's go to Shoal. This is Shoal Heller. He is a writer with Inter. and has been a guest of ours on the Phil Henry Show, and we're going to bring him up here on our Newsmaker line. Shul, how are you doing?
Hey, Phil, I'm good, and thank you for putting me on your program tonight.
And are you doing, you're writing an article about 420?
No, I listened to this man you have on your program right now. I wanted to ask him some questions.
Yes, sir.
First of all, sir, may I ask you your name?
Yes, sir. My name is Darren Brown. I'm a private attorney. I was a prosecuting attorney.
All right. My name is Saul. Saul Heller, and I write for a magazine in Germany called Inter.
Yes, sir.
I heard what you were saying to Phil. You mentioned that a young man in a test case, you said, had hallucinated the monkey or seen the monkey?
I said what I said to Phil was that we have cases in the case file of young people who have smoked marijuana and have actively hallucinated images, and in one case a young man smoked this marijuana.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you say that this is a potent you say, Phil?
Yeah, really potent weed.
It was very potent marijuana, yes, sir. It had a very high THC level, yes.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right. So this kid smoked this marijuana, got up from his sofa, walked over to the mirror, and saw he hallucinated what he said was a monkey or a monkey face.
So that was the monkey?
That was the monkey face that he saw.
All right, hold on, gentlemen. We'll be right back here with more. It's Darren Brown, and Shoal Heller is called in from Inter as we talk about 420, the effects of marijuana, and some of these crazy ideas that Darren has here about it being a gateway drug to heroin. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I'm talking about a monkey now. No, I'm not talking about a monkey. I'm talking about a loop.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and on the line with me is, we're talking right now to Darren Brown, who's an attorney at law, and we're actually discussing marijuana because 420 is coming up, which is this unofficial marijuana smokers holiday. We also have Shoal Heller, who is a writer for Inter Magazine, which is a German magazine. He's on the line with us as well. And Shoal, you wanted to make a point about Mr. Brown?
No, I wanted to ask the attorney that I had read, and we were going to do a piece on your fight against this Dr. Vagnini, if you remember that.
Yes, I know. Yes, the story of what he's referring to, Phil, is I looked into a Dr. Vagnini who has a television commercial right now that is advertising anti-aging testosterone pills. And I looked into prosecuting him for fraud. The name Vagnini, and I don't know how far you want me to go with this.
Well, you know that there was nothing to that.
I understand there was nothing to that. I don't know why I'm talking to this gentleman. Are you here to tell me, sir, that I am somehow, that I'm wrong?
No, I'm not saying. Your opinions are very, I think they're unorthodox about marijuana.
Well, they might be unorthodox about marijuana. In the United States, we've had a longstanding drug problem.
Well, and in Europe, we have the same problem.
You've got a lot of problems in Europe. One of them is drug use. And
all right, look, I don't know where you wanted to go. What were you saying about this Vagnini?
Vagnini was a doctor, unless you want to do it, Mr. Heller.
Well, yes, I looked into this Dr. Vagnini, who had a testosterone-type anti-aging kinds of pills that you could take. And so this is what he had. And Mr. Brown here, the attorney, when you are DA, you looked into him, you thought he was fraudulent based upon his name. And that's the only reason why I asked you the question, because I did not know what was your evidence,
My evidence was that this is a man whose name, he's a guy that's selling anti-aging testosterone pills. His name is Vagnini. Vag. So I thought that it would be a, it's a great name to change your name to if you're selling anti. You see what I'm saying, Phil?
Yeah. I mean.
Well, it does not seem like it's a very good evidence, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is the evidence. You'll want to have evidence against this man if he's going to commit some fraud. You have to have evidence. And your only evidence, the man's name is Vagnini. And his name is pronounced Vagnini.
Well, I pronounced it Vagnini because I thought, and I still think, that's what he wants people to say.
Okay, let me just stop you gentlemen right here.
Can't you see what I'm saying?
No, I don't, and I want to stop you right here. Because what I'm hearing here, Darren, is that you were going to did you investigate this man?
I was told by the county that to not pursue it. So I stopped, but I think they made a mistake.
And you were going to investigate this man for fraud simply because his name was Vagnini.
No, not simply because his name was Vagnini. No, I was not. I was investigating him because his name was, and I pronounced it Vagnini for a reason. Because I believe that's what he wanted people to say as he sold his anti-aging testosterone drugs. Do you understand? It's simply a link.
No, I know. I completely get it about the Vagnini, but I find it incredible that you would pursue a case with that as your only evidence.
As was our, that was our opinion too, Phil. When I wanted to do this article, I came to, you know, to Las Vegas. I was going to talk with him, and I, you know, I couldn't believe this, that you are going to, almost like you are going to persecute a man, you know?
I wasn't persecuting Vagnini, no.
Why did you call him Vagnini?
Because I feel that's what he wanted people to say.
And well, what was your evidence to that?
Well, I had talked to at least two individuals who'd purchased these pills from him, and they said Vagnini, and they would look at me and then look at each other and then smile and look down. Now, I understand what that was about. That was them. It was almost like a wink and a nod. You understand what I'm saying?
No, you said that these men...
I'm talking to the host of the show right now, if you don't mind, sir. Okay, do you understand what I mean, Phil?
Yeah. Well, you're saying that these two guys that you talked to who had purchased pills called him Dr. Vagnini and looked up and looked down and kind of gave you a look.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I'm talking to the host of the show right now, sir. Yes, that's what I mean. But they asked me to drop it, so I dropped it.
Well, in any event, that's why I recognize your name, because I, you know...
Well, ever since you came on this program, you have been indicting what I've been saying. You questioned whether this man had a monkey hallucination.
No, but you said there was a monkey, and I didn't know what you meant by that. And now you say it's a hallucination.
Yes, I wasn't telling Mr. Henry that a monkey was in the room. Is that what you thought?
I thought you meant that monkey, some sort of monkey. There was some sort of monkey.
Some sort of monkey what?
Well, it was when you were talking about the drug use, I thought you said, well, there was a monkey that was using. I've been trying to...
That a monkey was using? A monkey smoking marijuana?
Yes, that's why I wanted to ask you. I don't know what you mean by that. Was it a voluntary or...
Well, I don't know. This guy's beautiful, Phil. A monkey...
Well, look, he was talking about a monkey guy hallucinating.
Right. But you see, what I mean was he was talking about a monkey.
I was talking about a monkey, a guy hallucinating a monkey. God!
Wow, I think we've just lost... Are you there, Shoal?
Yeah, I'm right here. That was really interesting what he just did there. Did he hang up?
Yes, he hung up. You get him back, bud?
I'll try.
What? You tell me, because he got frustrated. What were you asking about?
I thought this man said that they had done some studies, case studies based upon a monkey.
That a monkey had smoked weed.
That a monkey had not only smoked, they had purchased, and this, I thought it was a stupid idea. That's what I'm saying. But I didn't want to anger him, you know, and I guess I did.
Yeah, well, okay. Shoal, thanks very much for being with us. I appreciate having you on the show. It's always great to talk to you.
Well, it's good to
talk to you, Phil, and I'm not trying to say anything other than here's these commercials where they say that we will increase your testosterone levels, fine. And I don't think, but this man has an insecurity, I think, that leads him to prosecute a man because his last name starts with that, you know? And I think that's childish.
All right. I agree with you. Joel Heller, thanks very much, Joel, for being on the show. 877-876-PHIL. Now, we're going to see if we can get back on the line here. We're going to try to get back on the line here. Darren Brown. Darren?
Yes, Phil.
All right. I know you got upset.
I got very upset.
And Mr. Heller is gone.
Well, I think that that's a wise choice.
Well, he hung up, and I'm glad. I'm glad we've got you back on because you were our guest that was booked. You got angry at him because he was asking some pretty stupid questions.
They were not only stupid. They were designed to try to make me look stupid. And
I can assure you he's a very fair-minded man. I think that he was, he got confused.
Yeah, he got confused. He got confused over this word monkey. I understand he sounds like he was European. Is he Dutch or?
German.
He's German. He's German. So, you know, there's a whole, I've got a lot of issues with that, and which I won't go into, but I will tell you that I feel he was trying to make me look stupid and continued on down this path with the talking about a monkey.
All right, Darren Brown with us, 877-876-PHIL. All right, just a couple of more minutes here before the break. Tell me what you want to see come out of... tomorrow is a celebration of marijuana. There's going to be people, and in some parts of the country, it's already tomorrow, where it's Friday. There's going to be people smoking a lot of weed, and there's going to be people celebrating marijuana, and there's going to be people who want marijuana legalized. And in other words, lots and lots of people on the opposite end of where you are on this issue, Darren. So what do you hope happens tomorrow?
Well, what I hope happens tomorrow is that a lot of people get arrested. If there's going to be a lot of people flaunting the drug laws of this country and these states, if there's going to be a lot of people, and let me tell you that the state of California right now, and rightfully so, has been targeted by the Justice Department, and there have been raids and there have been arrests, and I hope that those raids and those arrests continue. The federal law in this country has been flaunted long enough, and these medical marijuana dispensaries or whatever you want to call them, Phil, it's all well and good to pass a state law, but there is a supremacy to federal law. It's in our Constitution, and when the United States government prohibits the introduction of marijuana into the country, it prohibits the sale of it, prohibits the use of it, and there are states that violate that federal that federal law by selling and otherwise making it available to its citizens. Well, then there has to be a federal interdiction. And I hope that tomorrow, 420 sees more federal police, more drug-sniffing dogs, more helicopters, more guns, more cops than these people have seen in their wildest hallucinations. Because I'll tell you something. When they say that I don't have a right to go there, he doesn't know what he's talking about, because if I've got reasonable suspicion that a felony's being committed, I can go anywhere I want, because I got this badge, I got this gun, and I got the love of Jesus in my pretty blue eyes. You understand that, right?
Yeah, I sure do, Clint.
Okay, what is that crack supposed to mean?
Clint Eastwood in The Gauntlet? You just gave a whole monologue there.
So what if I did? So what if I did? I'll say it again. I hope tomorrow they see more guns, more drug-sniffing dogs, more helicopters than these people have seen in their wildest hallucinations.
Well, I...
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Darren Brown. Okay, so it will be interesting to see. Tomorrow would be a great day. I mean, I don't want to encourage it, but wouldn't that be funny? No, not really. If the Federals pick tomorrow as the day that they just come sweeping down on somebody's dispensaries and clinics, wherever they may be in the United States, in whatever the state, that'd be a real bad joke. You know, that'd be a real bad joke. 877-876-PHIL.
Hey, Phil, just one more. I wanted to just jump in.
Go ahead.
I hope to God, a bad joke, it would make my week. It would make my week. It would make my year to see the...
Thanks a lot, man. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is our number as we continue discussing 420, which is tomorrow, and is the, as I said, the unofficial, and Darren Brown is back with us for a few seconds. I didn't mean to hang up on you, Darren, you know, but it, we do have to keep it moving.
I understand, Phil. I just, I did have some things I wanted to say, and I was cut off.
Yeah, I understand that, but I had to keep it moving, and you were getting off into your Clint Eastwood, which I didn't understand that at all.
Well, I think it's one of the best monologues ever given in a police movie, where he says, he gives the definition of reasonable suspicion and where I can go and what I can do. And if people are smoking marijuana tomorrow, I can assure you that I will have more drug-sniffing dogs.
And yeah, no, I know the whole speech, but...
Well, then you, if you, then you know exactly what we're going
to
do.
But I just didn't need to hear it again. All right, let's go to line three. We got Jeff on the line. Hey, Jeff, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
First of all, I'm calling from Southern California, where there is a very large and significant number of people who use marijuana for medical reasons. I've got a medical marijuana license, and
can I ask you what you use the medical marijuana license for?
If I'm just going to finish what I was going to say, and then I'll, you know, talk to you, sir, but I'm here, and tomorrow is 420, and we're going to celebrate the legalization of the smoking of medical marijuana in the state of California, and we're also going to encourage people all over America and, you know, all over the country to encourage them to, we want to encourage them to be a part of it and to celebrate the greatness of America, you know.
Okay. Darren, you wanted to say something.
Well, I've got a couple of things to say. First of all, I wanted to ask you what you use your medical marijuana license for.
I use it for, I have had very bad sleep issues, and, you know, I've used, and I have headaches.
Have you had CAT scans
I'm not really going to go into, I have bad headaches and I can't sleep. And I also had, you know, I had an erectile dysfunction problem, which I'm not trying to, you know, make a joke or anything.
And smoking marijuana helps all of that, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, and so.
The part of that I didn't hear, did you say erectile dysfunction?
That's correct, yes, sir.
And that's helped you with the so-called ED, is that it?
Yeah, it has. Because I've had it just, you know, because I've got my nerves.
And you're telling me that erectile dysfunction. All right. My next question is, you said that this is a great country, but you're going to go out there tomorrow and violate the laws of this country. What makes it a great country if you're going to violate the laws of the country?
Well, first of all, it's a great country...
To violate laws in.
Not to violate laws in. It's a great country. Okay, here's this Dr. Vag. Hey, Toby.
Hey, Jeff, you want to stay with us here?
I'm sorry, but I just saw that Dr. Vag.
What channel are you looking at, sir?
Well, I'm not sure I want to tell you, because I know that you wanted to prosecute Dr. Vag. Let me explain.
Hold on for a minute, okay? I don't want to go off on this, all right?
Yeah, I think it's the military channel.
Okay, this guy, Dr. Vag, if I could hold on, Phil, I want to call my private eye.
No. And would you stop with the Dr. Vag thing?
Well, that's what that's what I thought.
That's what I know he wants people to know him as that. And he's got this thing called Hard Night Male Enhancement. Now, I didn't try it.
Yeah, okay, right there. I knew it.
Wait, what do you mean you tried it?
I did not try it. What I said was I wanted to try it, and I realized the guy's name was Dr. Vag. And that's when I thought the whole thing was a joke.
Yeah, that's why I said what I said about erectile dysfunction. You know,
I did not try Hard Night, okay?
That's why I said about the erectile function.
You mean erectile function?
I think that you were interested in the weed because of that.
No, I was not at all.
Well, did you try this stuff or not?
I told you that I was interested in prosecuting Dr. Vag, because that's what I think he wants to be known as.
You keep calling him that. And let me tell you just one thing here. You know, the more you talk about the guy, the more you advertise the guy, and the more people are going to be interested in what it is he's doing, okay? And you've mentioned the guy's product.
I mentioned Hard... Okay, I mentioned Hard Night then. All right, there, I just mentioned it again.
Yeah, that's what you did.
Yeah. What is your name again?
My name's Jeff Dowder.
Would you hold on for a minute because the grown-ups are talking? Is it?
Sir, I've been making some points.
Oh, hold on for a minute. Just hold on. I want to know, can we stop already with Dr. Vag?
I saw Dr. Vag on a tube. That's all. Yeah.
I get it. Now, you asked me, was I interested in smoking weed for erectile dysfunction? The answer to the question is yes, but I'm not going to do it because it's against the law.
Wow, you're calling it weed and everything? Do you smoke it?
I'm not. No, I do not smoke it.
So, but you did call it weed.
So what? That's what it is.
Right, but I mean, that's something only people that smoke weed would say.
Well, there, you just said it. Do you smoke weed? No.
No, but I did, and I, and... All right.
Yeah, and you want to try it for ED.
I didn't say I've got ED.
Well, then why'd you want to try Hard Night?
I didn't, because I'm not going to be sucked in by a guy named Vag.
You guys are not making any sense at all. Good night.
Wait a minute. Please don't hang.
God! Number one, forget anything you heard about Hard Night. I don't know anything about it, man. It's some late-night testosterone commercial. Number two, while tomorrow is 420, or today, depending upon where you are in the country, remember that smoking marijuana is a violation of federal law. And as such, the feds, they have been coming into California, I know, and probably other states, and they're busting these dispensaries. They just busted Oaksterdam, which is a big, big dispensary in Northern California in Oakland. So who knows where they're planning on traveling next. World-famous Phil Henry Show coming up as our News and Information Hour with Bud and Robert on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Live streaming video of our show right now with a backstage pass. You can see us performing the show as well as doing it. We'll be right back.
Wait a minute. Is Dr. Vag going to be...
That doesn't mean I'm going to go to Dr. Patrick.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, our News and Information Hour. It's nice to see you. I'm here, Bud Dickman. Bud?
How you doing?
And Robert Leonard.
Now, I want to ask you about that conversation I just heard you having with Dan about Ronnie Montrose.
Yeah, well, we were playing Bad Motor Scooter by Montrose during our break, and Dan mentioned that Ronnie Montrose, the news now is that he committed suicide.
Yeah, they said it was a gunshot.
Yeah. Did you know that, Bud?
Uh-uh.
So we were talking about, you know, Ronnie Montrose, and he was despondent, he was depressed, he'd had cancer, and apparently Dan mentioned that he felt he, and this is a very interesting thing. And again, I'm talking about a guitar player, folks, who was had his own band. He was also, you know, he had Sammy Hagar in his group for a while. I think he played, Ronnie Montrose played with maybe Edgar Winter and a few other bands. Anyway, he felt that he should have been held in much higher regard among the fans than he was. And he was held in high regard among guitar players. But he wasn't as popular as Clapton. He wasn't as popular as Hendrix. He wasn't as popular as Eddie Van Halen. He wasn't as popular, you know. But then, who knows the name Stephen Vai, you know?
Yeah, but Stephen Vai, he's great.
Well, so is Ronnie Montrose. The point that I'm making here is that these are guys that are known and respected by the other guitar players. The fans don't know them because the fans only know the names of the people that get on stage and, you know, and are the, you know, that's why Van Halen is famous. That's why Hendrix is famous. That's why Clapton is famous. They you know, they invested, I would dare say, either they did or the people around them invested a lot of time in making them commercially viable and successful guys. Eric Clapton, you know, was that kind of a guy. He had Phil Collins producing his music at one point. You don't do that, man, unless you want to really make a commercial splash. And Montrose didn't ever strike me as the kind of guy that would do that. And that's what you got to do, you know.
Yeah, but if you want to sell a lot of records, you don't have to do that.
Oh, yes, you do. See, you may think that all you got to do is make a great record, and oh, my goodness gracious, it's going to be number one. No. Wrong, man. Wrong. There's a whole lot that goes into making a hit record or a hit recording or a big seller. A lot of it is... First of all, a lot of it's just flat out, you know, who is it? What kind of record label is it? And are they getting behind this guy? Is he going out on tour a lot in support of this record, of this album, of this CD? Is he getting the marketing that he deserves, the promotion that he deserves? I mean, are they really getting behind the record? I mean, Rod Stewart, I remember I was a music director for a long time. Rod Stewart had some of the worst records I've ever heard. He had some of the worst music. And I'm not saying that he was bad, because there was a period where he had some good music. But there was a period there where Rod Stewart just flat sucked. And I don't care what anybody says. He sucked. And guess what? His stuff was being played everywhere, man. You trying to tell me that that guy's music merited all of that play? Well, it was a snowball effect. He was Rod Stewart. He'd been in Faces. Here comes these big songs like Maggie May and ba 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 boo 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 boo. And now we got to play Rod Stewart, and he comes out with this crap, absolute crap. You know,
like what?
Oh, Hot Legs, and that stuff sucked, man. Don't tell me that was good music. That was absolutely drunken, slobby. It's just crap. But by that point, that guy could do no wrong. There was a period there about 4 or 5 years, Rod Stewart was the biggest damn thing in music. He had a big record company. He was on Atlantic, and he was one of the fair-haired boys on that label, along with Led Zeppelin and a few others. And so they just loved his ass, and they would do anything for him, and they would put all kinds of money into promoting him. And Montrose, and if you're the kind of guy... If you're not a guy like Rod Stewart was, that's throwing television sets out the window and tearing it up and drinking, 6 or 7 bottles of that, you know, $150 a bottle freaking cognac. What is that crap?
I don't know. They're like Louis III or something like that now. I don't know.
Well, whatever. If you're just a guy that works hard and plays one hell of a good guitar and breaks his ass and does good records, I mean, that's boring. And there has to be a little bit of this panache and flash that sells it, too. So, and this is the reality, man. The reality is the following thing, that you're going to be in 100 years, when they talk about the great era of guitars and guitar players in rock and roll, they won't mention Ronnie Montrose. They won't. They will mention Clapton, and they'll mention Hendrix, and they'll mention, the guys like the Eddie Van Halen. They won't mention Montrose. They won't mention Steve Vai. They won't mention the cat who played for Ozzy, Dusty Rhodes. They won't mention any of those guys. They will mention the guys that the fans remember. Those are the ones who live in down in popularity in history. You know.
So you're telling me you're not even going to know who the guy was?
There'll be people who know who he is, like some people know who, like who was that guy in that movie we saw? Remember we saw that movie about Mozart?
Yeah, Amadeus.
Who was the other Salieri? Did you ever hear of him?
No, I never heard of him. I don't know the guy.
Yeah, and yet he was very popular in his day. And in that movie, this guy Salieri, wow, Salieri, what a fantastic... Who ever heard of that guy? Nobody. Not now. So, unfortunately, that's the, that's the way it goes, man. But, one thing about Montrose, at least he... knew that, he was good, and other musicians knew he was great, and he was true to his craft, and I don't know, man. Maybe there'll be a different way of quantifying these things in the future. I have no idea. All right.
What's that mean?
Quantify? Well, there'll be a different way of judging, of gauging, of what's the value of these things? Will we change? Are we going to change as time goes on? Are we going to no longer look at just who was the most popular guy? Are we actually going to look and see who was really the best? I don't know. Probably not. I don't think history changes in terms of recording history. It's always, well, like they say, it's the guy that wins. All right, now here is a story that is really fascinating. I remember hearing about this story a number of years ago, and it just, every time I read about this, it just blows me away. A little boy by the name of Eaton Patz, he was 6 years old when he disappeared on May the 25th of 1979 on his way to a bus stop in New York City. Gone. It's been more than 30 years after 6-year-old Eaton Patz disappeared in New York City on his way to the bus stop. Police and federal authorities now are tearing apart a lower Manhattan basement in search of clues as to what happened to the boy who became the face of missing children in America.
I never heard of this.
It was a big story at the time. It resurrected, maybe it was like the 20th anniversary when I read about it back in 1999. Eaton Patz disappeared on May the 25th, 1979, a block from his home in the city's Soho neighborhood, New York. It was the first time he walked to the bus stop by himself. He was six. Authorities said both new and old information led them to a carpenter and a part-time handyman who met Eaton the day before he disappeared and gave the boy a dollar. It was interest in the carpenter that prompted authorities to bring a cadaver dog to a Soho basement where Eaton apparently encountered the 42-year-old carpenter, according to a source with knowledge of the investigation. The dogs picked up the scent of human remains. Late Thursday, authorities set up a grid in the basement and were using jackhammers to rip up the concrete floor. They also took out part of the back wall of the basement, an unoccupied area beneath what was once a restaurant. Wow.
Did they find him?
They don't say yet whether they found him. I don't think so. We're looking for human remains, clothing, or other personal effects of Eaton Patz, according to New York City Department spokesperson Paul Brown. It's a very painstaking process because they're using jackhammers. You're looking for human remains.
Yeah, you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, you don't want to just go tearing ass into the. You don't know whether you're looking for the remains in the cement or whether you're looking for the remains in the dirt, the earth underneath it, or what. In 2010, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. Wow. I wonder if that guy's related to Cyrus Vance.
Who's he? Is he the guy in Tom Twist?
Tom Twist?
Yeah.
Who's Tom Twist?
You know, the story about Christmas.
Cyrus Vance, he's probably the son or the grandson of a famous American diplomat. What do you mean, Tom Twist?
What's the story about Christmas?
You guys talking about Tiny Tim?
Yeah.
What's that got to do with Cyrus Vance?
Ain't that the guy... Oh, no, Scrooge.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
In any event, Tom Twist.
All right, move on from it.
Yeah, just move on, man. We got it wrong. Move on. Don't keep playing it back.
Yeah.
Oh, well, excuse me, Mr. Producer. Excuse me.
Yeah, just let it go.
Yeah, okay, I'll just let it go. Thanks very much for giving me the ins and the outs on how to do this, man. It's so great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, just let go of it, man.
Okay, I'm letting go of it now. You want to watch me let go of it?
Come on, man, move on.
I'm going to move on, bud, as soon as you shut up. All right, so this guy, Cyrus Vance, what?
David.
Move on, will you? What do you keep talking about it for?
I'm moving on. What are you doing?
Well, I keep hearing you talking about this guy, Cyrus Vance, wasn't that the guy in Elmer Scrooge, or what was the guy's name?
Yeah, no, the guy named Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, Elmer Fudd in Christmas Carol?
Elmer Fudd wasn't in Christmas Carol. Ebenezer Scrooge was.
Wasn't that the guy?
No, this guy's name is Cyrus Vance.
Yeah, in Oliver Copperfield or whatever, I forget.
What's the one with Oliver Twist?
That's Oliver Twist.
Ain't that the Christmas one?
No, it's not. You guys are so stupid, it defies description.
Now, wait a minute, man. I don't...
All right, shut up. Not another word.
No.
Not another word. Let's take a break.
Yeah, I think you need one.
You say one more word, but I'm walking over there and I'm slugging you, okay?
Whatever.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Cyrus Vance. We'll be right back.
world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, you got the whole thing there, huh? What do you got? Welcome back, world famous Phil Hendry Show. What do you got?
I got the Cyrus Vance story. Now, the Cyrus Vance story.
Is that David's phone?
Yeah.
Hang it up, will you?
Cyrus Vance was the Secretary of the State. Okay.
Let me see that.
No, but you take that part.
You guys quit fooling with it and just read it.
Yeah, Cyrus Vance was a Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter.
Hey, Bud, hold on for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you know what a microphone is?
Yeah.
Then quit sticking your mouth up to it, man, like you're making love to it.
Shut up. Cyrus Vance was a Secretary of State. And then it says something here about a beanstalk. That's the guy who threw the seeds out in the back for the beanstalk.
Yeah, that's it, man. Because I knew that had something to do with...
What do you mean a beanstalk?
I'm just kidding.
I'm going to kick somebody's... Ah! Cyrus Vance threw some beans out the back. He was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. There, are you done with your Oliver Twist or Tiny Twist? Whatever the hell it was.
Tiny Twist.
Yeah, Tiny Twist. Charles Dickens would love that one, man, if he was still around. Hey, Chuck, I bet you that's what you guys would call him. Hey, Chuck, how about you combine Christmas Carol and Oliver Twist and you get Tiny Twist? What do you think?
That's pornographic.
Pornographic? Boy, your mind, man. I'd hate to you know, anyway. All right, so where were we? We were talking about this poor child that went missing in 1979, Cyrus Vance, and you guys got me sidetracked. In 2010, Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr., he's the son of Cyrus Vance, the former Secretary of State and former Assistant Secretary of the Army. He's the son of that man. He is now the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., said his office decided to take another look at the decades-old mystery. FBI leads were then culled from that case file. This was in 2010. The investigation, which has often been described as a milestone case that helped draw the plight of missing children into the national consciousness, garnered headlines as authorities splashed the child's image on the sides of milk cartons in the hopes of gathering more information. It's thought to be the first time that that step was taken for a missing child. Eaton was officially declared dead in 2001 as part of a civil lawsuit filed by his family against a drifter, Jose Antonio Ramos, a convicted child molester acquainted with Eaton's babysitter. A judge found Ramos responsible for the death and ordered him to pay the family $2 million. I guess he... must have paid that up. What does it say here? A drifter?
Yeah, but he had that just kicking around in a bank account.
Yeah. No, he never paid it. Though Ramos has been considered a key focus of the probe for years, he's never been charged in the case. He's now currently serving a 20-year sentence in Pennsylvania for molesting another boy and is set to be released later this year. A source said investigators now also want to expand the pool of possible suspects beyond Ramos. The carpenter, now 75, is not in custody, though authorities say they know where he is and are currently in contact with him. CNN is not naming the man because he's not been charged with a crime. Now, before I keep going...
Where's this guy, this drifter guy?
He's in prison. Now, it's very interesting. I think the whole thing around civil cases is fast when they say, you know, a civil case was filed... finding you responsible for the person's death, therefore you have to pay this money. I think that's... the closest thing to double jeopardy that I've ever heard of in my life. I know that it isn't technically because it's not a criminal case. It's a civil case, which means you're not going to go to jail, but you can be found responsible. They don't call you guilty. They say you're responsible for the death and you have to pay damages. This happened to O.J. Simpson. It's happened to a great many people. And this guy, this Ramos guy, was found by a judge to be responsible for the death of this kid. Now... they're expanding it beyond him. I wonder what that says about that civil case.
If they're going to find another guy guilty, guess he didn't do it.
Or maybe more than one person. I don't know. Dozens of police and federal agents gathered outside the building on Manhattan's Prince Street on Thursday and are expected to continue their search over the next 5 days. FBI Special Agent Peter Donald said the Bureau's evidence recovery team is at the scene. Here is FBI Special Agent Tim Flannelly speaking. He said, quote, "We are cautiously optimistic that the search will be helpful." Forensic evidence uncovered at the scene will be analyzed at the FBI laboratory in Quantico, Virginia. It's not clear whether authorities searched the basement in 1979, though a source said it figured into the investigation.
What's that mean?
I don't know what it means.
But they didn't search it?
It says it's not clear whether authorities searched the basement. You know, I always love this. I got to tell you, one of the things I'm learning is that police work today is far more meticulous, or maybe it's just demanding more things than it demanded of cops back in the old days. Because when I say back in the old days, because don't you think cops would keep notes? Or like, did you search the basement? Yes, we did. How do we? Well, I have it in my notes. You know, that day we went down. At least I've got notes on what we did. But they don't, you know, they throw stuff out.
Yeah, they got to throw stuff out, man. They can't keep everything. You know,
but I mean the notes on a case that's still open. Come on, I mean, yeah, I know they throw stuff out, but they haven't found this kid. If ever there was a case where you're not going to throw stuff out, all right. So anyway, it's not clear whether authorities searched the basement in 79. Authorities have reason to think the new search could lead to the discovery of the boy's remains at that location, though they remain wary after past leads in the case failed to pan out, according to two familiar sources with the probe. Interesting. I hope they find something, said resident Sean Sweeney, who says he's lived in the neighborhood since 1976.
Boy, that guy's probably seen a lot. Son of Sam and everything.
Well, I don't know. Son of Sam was in Brooklyn, wasn't it?
What's the difference?
The difference is one place is Brooklyn, this is another part. What do you mean, what's the difference? Soho, a lower Manhattan neighborhood now known for its boutique shops, art galleries, and loft apartments, at the time was considered a grittier locale where abandoned storefronts dotted the city streets. Sweeney said he remembers the initial investigation into Eaton's disappearance when police first knocked on his door in search of clues. That's odd, isn't it? He said, referring to the fact that 33 years later, police are again in his neighborhood searching for the boy. So this guy that was is being quoted. On the day of his disappearance, Eaton's mother, Julie Patz, learned after her son failed to return home from school that he hadn't been in classes that day. She called the school, then called the homes of all of his friends. When she found no one who had seen her son, she called police and filed a missing person report. By evening, more than 100 police officers and searchers had gathered with bloodhounds. The search continued for weeks, but no clues to Eaton's whereabouts were found.
Yeah, but see, why'd they get the cops involved that soon?
Why'd they get the cops in? Because the kid was missing.
Yeah, but he might have just decided to take, you know.
Yeah, maybe he decided just to take a vacation.
Are you guys stupid or something?
That's what they say about missing persons.
If they're adults, yeah. He might have decided to take a vacation. He's a 6-year-old kid, man.
Yeah, all they talk about, you know, you don't know if they took off maybe just to clear their head.
Yeah, that's right. A 6-year-old kid takes off to get his head cleared out. Because, you know, it's been a lot of pressure lately. No, man. Not a 6-year-old kid. Adults, yes. Adults, you say, well, maybe they took off. Maybe she left you, man. Sorry, Charlie. Who knows? But not a little baby. We'll be right back. The world famous. Boy, I can't wait for what you guys are going to ask me in the next 30 minutes.
Well, it's just stuff we're interested in.
Yeah, huh? How about finishing school? That'd be something, bud. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
You think I gotta do that?
Yeah, you look like a midget.
I don't look like a midget, but I think we're looking at our video cast here. I think I gotta sit up higher in the chair or something. I don't know.
Yeah, if you do that, though, man, they're gonna be able to see the like the beautiful ocean.
Well, that's true, too. But I do look like, I don't know, I look too close or something. Anyway, welcome back to the program. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're looking at our video cast. You can watch us on video at philhendryshow.com. With the backstage pass, you can see us perform our show. It's just something else. So check us out at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and find out, as we like to say, what the only real radio show left on Earth not only sounds like, but looks like. Okay. Now, I've got just the tail end of the story because, and I apologize that I haven't finished this story, but I've been interrupted.
Yeah, well, I just had some questions.
Great. You can have questions. Just quit butting in. On the day of his disappearance, well, I told you, his mother called the police. Now, we're talking about this Eaton Patz. This young boy has been missing since 1979. The police are now investigating and are tearing apart a basement in the area that the child went missing. This is Soho, and they've got jackhammers in this basement. It is a basement that is either owned or was rented by a carpenter, a 75-year-old carpenter, a man who is not in custody, but is in touch with authorities, and they're in touch with him, so they know where he is. And they're looking into this. They're looking into this basement. There's an evidence recovery team at the scene, and one of the FBI agents is quoted as saying, "We are cautiously optimistic." So that's interesting. However, they have been in the past disappointed by other tips. So let me move on to the tail end of the story. By evening, and this is evening of the day this child went missing, more than 100 police officers and searchers had gathered with bloodhounds. The search continued for weeks. No clues to Eaton's whereabouts were ever found. The boy's disappearance was thought to raise awareness of child abductions and led to new ways to search for missing children. President Reagan named May 25th, the day Eaton went missing, National Missing Children's Day. All right, there you go.
That's when they put him on a milk carton, huh?
He was the first child to be put on a milk carton, yeah. Put the picture on a milk carton. Eaton Patz. So that's, you know, and I don't know whether they're going to find out. Well, we'll see, man. The guy's optimistic. But, you know, like we were saying during the break, and I'll tell you, I love Investigation Discovery. I think it's the greatest channel in the history of the world, man. I'm telling you. Now, you know, it isn't that I've got a macabre curiosity about death and mayhem and crime, but I am interested. Let's face it. What bedevils society more than anything? Well, it's criminal activity. You know, it isn't the economy is up, the economy's down, and I don't know. Should we go to war? Should we not? And, you know, should we salute the flag? Should we? But what is the thing that really hassles us more than anything else? Criminals. You know, you get rid of crime, that like 90% of our problems would dry up. But all we'd have to do is just worry about this other stuff, you know, whether or not we're being productive as a country, society, economy, blah, 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 all that other good stuff. But we got to deal with some jackass who's stealing our car or killing our kids or something. So it behooves us to learn more about it. You know, how do you, first of all, what causes it? But that's going to take a long time. But how about how to solve some of these crimes? And that's why I love watching, because they have so many different shows.
Yeah, they got that, like that forensic one.
Oh, the forensic thing is incredible, man. I mean, they are learning. You got to understand, folks, DNA. Forget about DNA. Those pea brains that did that whole Casey Anthony trial, I'll never, that jury, jeez. I get it about, you know, Jeff Ashton and the other attorney, I forget the woman's name. You know, I think, and in retrospect, they butchered that. Just butchered it.
Are you kidding me? They did a good job. The jury was dumb.
No, well, look, the jury was whatever the jury was. And all that stuff, you know, oh, well, where's the DNA? Well, look at, man, you'll excuse us, but they were actually finding people guilty in days when there was no DNA evidence. So what are you talking about? I think the attorneys were, when I think back on that case and I think more and more about it, I think those two attorneys were lousy. Lousy.
Hey, wait a minute. How do you say that, man? Everybody knows it was good.
Yeah, people were writing songs about it and everything.
What do you mean writing songs about him?
They had that one song by that lady, Linda.
Is that an L.A. Linda? Well, good. They can write songs they want, all they want. But the two of them laid that case out real jackball, man. They needed to get real. They had to get real specific with evidence and not talk about these highfalutin notions of, well, the little baby is going to, she's talking now and she may tell people that mommy is out dancing and I better kill her. And this is a whole bunch of gobbledygook. But here's what I'm trying to say. They didn't have any DNA, man. They have, these days, they not only have DNA, they got bugs, man. Bugs.
What do you mean, bugs?
They look and see what kind of insect they found at the crime scene. So they got a dead body, and they have a certain insect with the dead body. They can tell you when the body was there, how long the body's been dead, from what season, you know.
I thought they had a doctor come along and take the temperature rectally.
Yeah.
Take the temperature rectally.
Yeah, the dead body. That way they know when it croaked.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. What if it's been dead, say, 3 years?
Well,
Can they do it still?
No. No, they can't, man.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no. 3 years, a dead corpse, it's probably just bones. You're not going to be able to take its temperature rectally.
Yes.
Shut up, man.
All right, bud. You know, you think it's funny?
No, but I mean...
They're not going to be able to take its temperature rectally, okay? So what they have to do to find out the time of death is they have to look at the environment that it's in. Find out what kind of, literally, insects. When do certain insects lay their eggs? When do certain insects, and what time of year would that insect, as opposed to that one, be around? Plus, the kind of trees, the kind of leaves, the kind of weeds. This is all now a part of crime scene analysis. So they find just a bunch of bones, okay? They try to find what may be lying underneath it. What is the state of this environment now, as opposed to when maybe the body was laid there? Take its temperature rectally.
Well, I mean, I didn't know. You know, I know you can't do it with a skeleton.
Hey, give the man a cigar. You can't do it with a skeleton. All right, let's move on to other news.
You're just thinking about taking a temperature rectally because he turns you on.
Shut up. Hey. Judge allows University of Colorado crackdown on pot rally. Huh? Well, here's a 420 story, man. A judge upheld on Thursday the right of the University of Colorado to restrict outside visitors to its flagship campus for a day in a move school officials hope will squelch a huge marijuana smoke-in that has become an annual tradition. The Boulder campus, located in one of the most liberal cities in Colorado, has warned it would no longer tolerate the annual gathering of pot smokers planned for Friday, which drew an estimated 10,000 people last year. The event is held on April the 20th, or...
420!
Right. A date corresponding with a numerical code widely known within the cannabis subculture as a symbol for all things marijuana. Whatever.
Ain't it, though?
I don't know. I heard that it's like the time on the clock, you know, that was the first. I'll tell you what I heard. I heard that 420 was the day some guys started smoking weed. They were Grateful Dead fans, and they smoked dope after school at 420. And I think they were going to a Dead concert. Okay.
That sounds stupid.
Of course it sounds stupid, but that's the most verifiably substantial. That's the one story that everybody has pointed to as being close to actually the real case. It was started by some Dead fans smoking dope at 4:20 in the afternoon. They might have been on their way to a Dead concert. I don't know. All right, so where were we? Yes, so this is a numerical code, yada, 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 yada. The university's move comes as federal authorities are cracking down on some medical pot dispensaries in Colorado and several mostly Western states. Yeah, like...
California.
A total of 16 states and the District of Columbia allow medical marijuana despite opposition from the federal government. Boulder District Judge Andrew McDonald said at a hearing that the school's plan to bar visitors may be dumb or great, but that he would not comment on its wisdom. The issue is whether the university has the authority to put reasonable restrictions on the use of their facilities, McDonald said, in ruling that the college could take that action. Boulder Chancellor Phil DiStefano testified that past efforts to halt the rally have failed, including turning on lawn sprinklers and a program that offered to pay students to identify anyone caught in photographs smoking marijuana at the event. Yeah, right. You know?
Yeah, I'm sure they got people narc everybody out. Ain't going to happen.
Speaking of narking people out, what were you saying, Bud, about D.A.R.E.?
Yeah, when I came up in a D.A.R.E. program, they told you to nark your folks out.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too.
No kidding. No? So did you?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. All right, so anyway, he also said the decade-old gathering disrupts teaching and research on the heart of the campus. Visitors who enter the campus without permission on Friday could face trespassing charges and a fine of $750, according to school officials. No one, including students, will be allowed on the field where the raucous smoke-filled gathering has previously been held. What field is that, man?
Probably like an athletic field.
Attorney Robert Corey, who represents medical marijuana businesses in Colorado, had filed a complaint seeking an injunction that would block the university from restricting access. The legal papers he filed said the gathering at the university conveyed an anti-prohibition message. If free speech isn't allowed on a college campus, where is it safe? Corey told Reuters. The Colorado chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union has also objected to the university's action. Boulder District Attorney Stanley Garnett, who recently gained acclaim among pot activists for voicing objection to a federal crackdown on Colorado medical cannabis dispensaries, told Reuters earlier this month his office was involved in efforts to control the University of Colorado rally. Well, first of all, you can talk about it being speech, but part of that speech is the breaking of a law. So that becomes civil disobedience, and so cops arrest. So either way, your ass is up for grabs.
Well, they're going to come in and bust people?
Yeah, they're telling you can't go on the field. They're not letting anybody on the campus.
So they're serious?
Yeah, they're serious. What do you think, they're kidding? They're telling people, if you show up, we're going to have you arrested. And I'll bet you, and I'll tell you right now, man, if anybody starts smoking weed, damn sure they'll have them arrested. There you go, man. The most liberal city in America, but not quite. All right, world-famous Phil Hendry. She'll be right back here, 877-876-PHIL. It is our news and information hour. Don't forget to head on over to our website after the show for a show log. Tells you what all happened on the show. And get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We were just talking about this whole idea of federal enforcement of federal marijuana laws, and you know, there's people that I know who smoke weed, who have medical marijuana licenses, and who are in favor of keeping the dispensaries open in whatever state. I'm in favor of keeping the dispensaries open, but I understand. And then they say this. They go, "What's Obama doing?" And Obama, let me explain what Obama's doing, okay? Obama can't ignore a state governor saying, "Hey, excuse me, Mr. President, we got a federal law being broken here, and we want some enforcement." He can't say, "Stick it up your you-know-what, man. I'm not interested because I'm in favor of decriminalizing weed." That's not what the President of the United States and the Attorney General of the United States are supposed to do. That's the executive branch of the government. That's the law enforcement branch of the government. I don't give a damn if a president, and believe me, you have to be this way if you're president. You may like this and you may like that. There may be a million things that you want and you don't want. But if a governor of a state says, well, so, you know, when Obama became president, I remember him saying, and Holder said the same thing, you know, we're going to back off of the federal interdiction of these laws. We've got other things we want to do. And so everybody, you know, was all excited about that. And people who were in favor of legalizing marijuana were all excited. As I was. But the minute somebody comes to you, and you know that there's guys getting up in Congress and elsewhere, "Mr. President, in my state, why this and that, what the hell are you doing, man? Sitting on your dead ass? Let's go, baby. Let's get some people around." You know, you got to call out the freaking forces, and you got to go in there, and you got to do what you got to do. You know, I wish it wasn't that way, but hey, you know, this is America. We are talking about marijuana. At which nobody, you know, we're the most uneducated country probably in the world when it comes to pot. Now, the Attorney General in California.
She's black, too.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, you'd think she'd be more liberal.
Why, bud? Because she's black? You ever heard of Condoleezza Rice?
No. Well, Condoleezza Rice, she was raised by white people.
What's that? What are you talking about, man?
I'm just saying. Don't you think if she's a black attorney general, she'd be a liberal?
No.
Why, bud? I mean, you people come from all walks of life. The attorney general for the state of California is Kamala Harris. I don't really know, but I'm going to tell you this much. Somebody in California said to the federals, and it probably was a representative or something.
Yeah, probably some guy in Congress.
Said to the federals, "Hey, we got all these dispensaries in California. You guys are standing around with your thumb up your rear end. Let's go, man. Let's hit it."
Can't say no to that, huh?
You ain't going to say no to that. What are you, the attorney general? You say no? No, you know, I'm not really interested. Oh, you're not, huh? Well, guess what? How would you like us to, you know, bring articles of impeachment against your ass or whoever we get rid of attorney generals? Would you like that? If you're not going to do your job. So I, no doubt somebody put the pressure on. They put the heat on. Now, Kamala Harris, used to be the San Francisco DA. So, I don't know. All signs point to the fact that she's a liberal, but she's enforcing, assisting in enforcing the federal law here in California. So they've swept in, they busted down on Oaksterdam, which is...
What's Oaksterdam anyway?
Yeah, is that up in Oakland?
It's in Oakland. And it's a university, or it's at least a institution of learning. You can actually get degrees in something.
Like get a degree in smoking weed.
But I'd love to get a degree like that.
I mean, get my doctorate in bud.
What a retard, man.
I got it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it out eventually. I'm going to get my doctorate in smoking bud. Anyway.
You know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. Sure, bud. All right.
And for another man, your name is Bud. I bet you they named you after what it was they were smoking before they conceived you.
Oh, that's real funny.
All right, take it easy. So that's the name of that game, man. What the hell do you want me to tell you? That's how it works, all right? So quit crying about it. Talking about Obama stabbing you in the back, and Obama's this, and Obama's that. Obama is the president of the United States. He's got to uphold the law. That's number one. Number two... and I've said this before about Obama. He's far more the pragmatist than people really want to recognize. Some of these people make me laugh until I want to throw up. They're talking about how Obama, well, you know, he was supported by progressives. How come he's not doing this about the Patriot and this and that? You talk about misreading a guy. I've never seen a president more misread by people in my life. You know?
Yeah, he even thinks the Kardashians are sluts.
The who?
You talking about the Kardashians?
Yeah.
Kardashians. He thinks they're sluts.
Yeah. He don't want his kids watching it or nothing.
That's what he was saying. They don't want no kids watching it.
Hey, by the way, speaking of the Kardashians, Kim Kardashian, am I right? Did I read that she wants to run for mayor of Glendale?
Yeah, she does.
Why?
It said on a calendar there was a lot of Armenian there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Armenians in Glendale and everything.
Armenians in Glendale, huh?
Yeah, you used to live up there, didn't you?
I lived in Pasadena. I'll tell you where I lived in Pasadena. There was a lot of Armenians. There's probably a lot of Armenians in that part of Pasadena, Glendale, up in the foothills.
Yeah, probably Armenians like the mountainous regions on account of the billy goats, or that they used to have.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
The billy goats they used to have?
Don't Armenians like mountainous areas?
Not that I know of. Armenians like mountainous areas.
You just said they live in a foothill.
They live in the foothills up there, man. It's not because they like mountainous areas. That's where they happen to... Maybe that's where the real estate prices were good. Do they like mountainous areas?
Didn't they have billy goats on account of what you were saying?
No! What I said to you guys about Armenians was the following. In World War I, the Turks... who were already with their asses in their hands. They were done. The Turkish Ottoman Empire was in big, big trouble. They wanted to consolidate their lands, their little empire. They wanted also to effect some changes militarily, and it all came down to the Armenians having to be moved. And it was a inhumane and genocidal forced migration of... hundreds of thousands of people, and it killed millions. What that's got to do with billy goats?
Yeah, you said they took goats.
Whatever, they might have taken goats, but it's a serious topic. God. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft, and join us online at philhendryshow.com for our marvelous, marvelous video casts, all of our... all of our fantastic archives. We got it all there, baby. You just got to check it out there at philhendryshow.com. And, of course, our merchandise shop as well, where you can pick up your hoodies and your keychains and like that, okay? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Let that be a lesson
Phil
to you.
Hendry.